young Jason Bell. Good evening to you, Jason.
Happy belated Father's Day, Ken.
Well, thank you very kindly. Thank you. Is it appropriate for me to say same to you? Shall I say reciprocal greetings?
You shall say that in advance, sir.
Okay, I would be way in advance.
In the future, I will have that pleasure and honor. And massive, massive responsibility.
Oh, dear.
This weekend, I was really reflecting on the goodness of the fathers, you know, fathers of the faith, my own dad, retired Station Sergeant Keith Bell, 855 Royal Barbados Police Force. Good night, Dad. How are you doing? And all the men who have mentored me into the person that I am, not without faults, not without areas to improve, but certainly living and loving for the health of it in association with the Diabetes Association of Barbados. I'm Jason Bell, as Ken said, and with us on the line tonight, we have some big guns, but we bring in another daughter of somebody's father. Trudy Griffin, how are you doing, Trudy?
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, Barbados. Jason, I didn't know we had something in common.
We do?
Yes.
We both have
fathers who were policemen.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, then. Well, that is a particular... We should share a drink about it sometime.
Does this make both of you lawful?
Usually, yeah. Trying to take it to indicate otherwise, but I'm usually quite lawful, yeah.
I want to say good evening to all the fathers out there who would have celebrated Father's Day. I know Father's Day is one special day of the year where you can post all the pictures in the world on all of your social media platforms, where you will show your pride about the children that you have fathered and what they have accomplished in life.
Absolutely. All the old pics, all the memes, all the photo shoots, all the embarrassing pictures from childhood, babyhood, all the way up to now.
Yeah. So this evening, we actually want to remain focused on fathers. And we want to look at fathering from a very particular perspective, which is honoring those fathers who have children who are living with type 1 diabetes. So you know that we've talked about diabetes for quite some time over the few weeks that we've been on the air.
But this evening,
we're actually going to be focusing on children living with type 1 diabetes and making that transition into adulthood, that phase that we call puberty or adolescence, which can be quite challenging. And it's even more challenging when you have a child who has type 1 diabetes.
Yeah. Yep. So we have a special guest on the line tonight.
Yes, we do. We have with us on the line Dr. Michelle Lashley. She is a familiar name across the length and breadth of Barbados because she's a well-known pediatrician. And she also lectures in child health at the Faculty of Medical Sciences, Cavehill Campus, where she also serves as deputy dean for the clinical phase of the medical program. Dr. Lashley, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much for your welcome. And I'm really happy to be here with you this evening. Type 1 diabetes is my special joy. I haven't advertised myself as a diabetologist, but that is the group of children that I spend a lot of time with, particularly at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
Excellent. Thanks for coming, Dr. Michelle. And you are not just a doctor, but you're a doctor of doctors, or a trainer of doctors.
A trainer, not quite the doctor of the doctors, but a trainer, trying to make them better.
Wonderful. So happy to have you. Thank you. All right, Trudy, so let's proceed for the health of it.
Okay, so before we really get into our discussion, I want to invite our listeners who are tuned in. If you want to call in and ask any questions, you are certainly free to do so. Jason, can you please share the contact information for our listeners?
Absolutely. We invite our listeners to call 434-1790, 434-1790, or you can WhatsApp us at 246, that's the area code, 266-IVOB. That number, 266-4862. Remember, listeners and guests, there's a sense of humor in this program. We have fun, and we learn, and we live, and we love for the health of it. Let us proceed. Looking forward to your calls, callers.
Okay, so Dr. Lashley, let's start from the foundation of our topic this evening. So can you share with us the changes that young girls and young boys go through as they enter puberty? Because
sure.
Let's start at the very beginning so that we're all on the same page.
That's fantastic. Very good question, because some people actually interchange puberty and adolescence. And officially, adolescence is really what we call our teen years, which would be the 13 to 18 plus, whereas puberty is the period of time when the child's body is actually first starting to make their changes. So for the real, real definition would be that a child enters puberty at the beginning when their body is making those first changes into adult form. So like in the boy, this is marked more like the physical changes that you would see in the boy with his growth spurt and his height and weight, developing hair, and changing in his voice, and obviously changing his genitalia. In the girls, puberty is obviously a little bit more obvious because the girl's body changes quite dramatically, as everyone knows. But the first sign of puberty in most girls is the beginning of breast development. And those girls get taller, faster, quicker, have their big growth spurt, and that both of those can occur at a variety of ages. The most common age for puberty to occur in a girl, however, in our population, is around that 10-plus age group. So somewhere between about 9 at the earliest and around just over 10 is the time that you start to see the girls making their big growth spurts and their development. The boys tend to be a little bit later, even in our population, with the earliest boys showing their first signs of puberty closer to around 10 rather than 9, and the average age for boys is about 11. So there's about a 1 year difference between the two of them. In our population, generally speaking, from in the last, I would say, decade or two, we are seeing puberty a little earlier than you would have seen for perhaps your grandparents or even our parents' age group. We don't know why. This has a lot to do with what we eat, what we drink, what we inhale, what's going on in our environment. But the children are entering puberty about a year and sometimes a year or two earlier than our predecessors about 15, 20 years ago.
Well, I fall completely out of the spectrum. I started at 7.
So there are a great variety, yeah? And
yes.
The ages I mentioned are really the average. You can get as early. The earliest age for girls is between about the 7 to 8. And the earliest age for boys we are comfortable with is usually about 8.5 to 9. That you'll be comfortable that they are within the range of normality. Obviously, puberty can also start much later. And for girls, that kind of later age where you would expect to see nothing happening at all would be up to at least no later than about 13. So if the girl has no signs of anything at all past the age of 13, you start to get a little worried that something wasn't going right. For boys, that tends to be probably around the 14 age group. So boys can, as I said, be a little bit delayed more than the girls. So there was a year difference between the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if a boy has no signs of puberty by about 14 to 15, you would definitely be getting worried. So there is a huge variety and a spectrum that we look at for normality. But those averages, say at about 9, 10 for the girls, and I said 10, 11 for the boys. It's about the average in the society in general. Remember that we're talking about a transitional phase too. So puberty doesn't just start one day and end the second day. It can span over several years. So it can start as early as 9, but you may not ever have your menstrual periods until you're about 12 plus. So it is quite a variety of when puberty starts and when each event in puberty goes along. And all of that is mixed up then with not only the physical changes we see, but the psychosocial and emotional, which I know is where we're going to talk about a little bit about what's going on next.
Jason, did you want to ask a question?
I wanted to ask a question, but I jumped the gun, and I'm so happy that I muted myself on purpose, because that was some very fascinating information on the numbers that you should expect for normal puberty development. Now, my question, which I will interject at this time, is that our only time that we see the manifestation of type 1 diabetes in children, or does it usually show up in children younger or older?
Unfortunately, puberty is not, well, I should say not unfortunately, it's that fortunately, puberty does not have a bearing on when type 1 diabetes comes to light. Our youngest children with type 1 diabetes can be as young as a year old. And you can have type 1 diabetes presenting for the first time in adulthood, usually under 30. So again, right. A wide variety. And diabetes, certain type 1 diabetes is not precipitated by puberty. However, type 2 diabetes can sometimes be seen for the first time in those younger pubertal children. And it has a lot to do with their changes in body habitus and the weight gain that might occur during that early stage. So type 1 diabetes, as you know, is diabetes that is a different variety than the normal adult type that you see, which is more common in the society. Type 1 diabetes has an autoimmune, in other words, it's more to do with antibodies against the organ which makes insulin, which is the pancreas. But type 2 diabetes, unfortunately, can occur in childhood. And those younger children with type 2 diabetes tend to show up around puberty or just are within the early adolescent stages if you do happen to have type 2 diabetes of childhood. It's a fascinating condition because we know so little about it that the more we know, it seems to get more and more interesting. But we are seeing a few more children like that in the early teenage years. We're talking about between about 12 and 15 who present with type 2 diabetes, which is the adult form that your population normally has, but something has precipitated it. And puberty seems to be one of those factors. Not the only factor, but one of those factors.
Excellent. My question again, following on to what you just said, or rather, ask you to backtrack a little bit. I heard you say something about antibodies. And Dr. Michelle, I have to let you know that during the course of this series, and Trudy, we need to really put this together. I literally have a whiteboard at my house, Dr. Michelle, and on that we are trying to put together a glossary of terms. You mentioned antibodies and how it may contribute to damage in the pancreas. Is that what I heard you to say? Or would you mind explaining that again? And then I'll ask my follow-on question, which has to do with genetics.
Well, I know many people will think of antibodies as things that occur for infection. It's the products the body makes. This is as simple as it can be. The product the body makes to fight off something that shouldn't be there. Unfortunately, we have a group of antibodies that are called autoantibodies. These are antibodies that fight against our own normal body parts. And it could be an organ, it could be parts of an organ, it could be a product that's produced. So in diabetes, what are produced are autoantibodies against the insulin that your body should normally be producing.
So your body is literally fighting against itself.
Because what I'm saying is that we're supposed to be producing insulin, which is the hormone that helps us manage our sugars, glucose, carbohydrates, all of the food particles that we're eating,
right.
And we're then producing antibodies against it. And that's what these are all about for type 1 diabetes for the most part.
So is it possible? We are living in some very interesting times where folks want to almost give birth to designer babies, and they are very concerned about their genetics. Is type 1 diabetes, and you mentioned, I can't even know the answer, but I want to just spell it out for the public. Is it that you have a, that you can pick up maybe that you have a greater predisposition for type 1 diabetes? Does it run in families? Do you can is there a gene that you can detect for? Maybe I have a recessive gene before, so I should know what may be going on in my body and what I may pass on to my children in terms of type 1 diabetes?
Yes and no. It's genetic in the context. There is an identified genetic abnormality, but it's on a particular type of part of your DNA called the HLA sequencing. So it's not as easy to pick up. There's no simple, cheap test that we can do to say, well, I have this gene that will know that I have it. And unfortunately, it is not only the gene that makes you get diabetes. There's also a trigger. And that's why there are several trials. In fact, there's a huge trial going on in North America where people who have been found to have that genetic link incidentally are followed. And over the course of time to see whether they actually do develop type 1 diabetes. And probably about maybe a third to 50% do. And the trigger seems to be something else that then makes those autoantibodies come into being. So it's a very complex picture, but the world is becoming simpler and simpler because we're beginning to understand genetics a bit more. And one of the things that is happening as trial, not as a treatment, but as a trial, is to look at families where there are higher incidences of type 1 diabetes and trying to identify whether they are at risk in their children or their siblings would have a higher risk by looking at those genetic markers. So there is some merit in it, but it is not something that is widespread and enough known about it yet to say we can use that as a specific marker to tell someone, yes, you will get type 1 or you won't, just yet.
Okay, thank you so much. Trudy?
So, Dr. Lashley, I want to revisit the question that Jason asked you, but from a slightly different angle. Mm-hmm. So, you would have shared with him that puberty does not trigger diabetes. But certainly, if you have a child who's been diagnosed with diabetes before the age of puberty, what happens with that child when they enter puberty?
Right. That's
how is
an
their diabetes
question.
Affected?
That's an excellent question. Remember I told you that with puberty, we have biological changes, and then we also have psychosocial changes. So the biological changes are are caused by hormonal changes in each body. And unfortunately, those hormones also affect how diabetes is managed in the context that those hormones actually lead to greater insulin resistance. So even though they may be doing all the right things, when puberty comes along, you suddenly find that they need more insulin. And it's a little bit scary for some of those children or parents who think that they've been doing so great all along, and then suddenly their diabetes is going out of control just as puberty starts. There are other factors during puberty that can affect their diabetes management. I mean, simple little things. Because you have diabetes and you're going to puberty doesn't mean you're very special. It just means you are a pubertal child who has diabetes. So in other words, you are a normal person otherwise. And the same thing that happens to young children with diabetes is the same thing that happens to every normal adolescent. They stop doing what their parents ask them to do, which is the general theme of adolescence. And
you laugh a little too hard. You sound like you can relate a lot to that.
I should have muted my phone.
That's exactly what I did. But I guess we both pulled on ourselves there.
But it's quite right. I mean, my adolescent type 1 diabetes youngsters made me tear out hair, go gray, roll my eyes, do all kind of things. But essentially, they're just behaving like normal adolescents. With the added factor that they have diabetes. So simple thing. They don't want to do things at the same time. They stop exercising. Those, if you realize that when they move from primary school to secondary, it's often just at that phase of adolescence happening. You have that 9 to 11 phase.
Yeah.
And you the children who are in sport doing all their exercise in primary school, they hit secondary school and suddenly they're in front of a screen. They're on WhatsApp. They're on Instagram. They don't do any more exercise. So that influences their diabetes management because exercise is part of the program. Then, they, as I said, they don't listen. So they start ignoring you. They start doing strange things with their treatment. And they start taking risky behaviors. And the risky behaviors are either because diabetes becomes a chore to them and they want to fit in. Being having to stop to take a blood sugar or give insulin is a big, big, big thing for an adolescent. They suddenly look at themselves and realize, I'm not doing the same thing my friends are doing. And they start taking risky behaviors, either by not testing, not checking their blood sugars, doing eating, taking foods that they shouldn't, and all the other things that match up to not managing diabetes very well. It's also the time that mental health issues suddenly rear their head.
Psychosocial factors.
The depression.
Yes.
Mental health, yes.
Absolutely.
And we take it for granted. But mental health issues rear their head in adolescence. And those also influence how diabetes is controlled and managed. So it's not just the hormones. It's the whole of the adolescent pubertal behavior that influences things that are going on. And it can be quite scary for the parents at this time because they're seeing or think that they are no longer in control. And I'll just hold there to ask if there are any queries on that.
You're listening to For the Health of It in association with the Diabetes Association of Barbados. My name is Jason Bell, and alongside us is our president of the Diabetes Association of Barbados, Ms. Trudy Griffith. And let me get the correct title here. I want to make sure I give you the proper appellation, Dr. Michelle. Dr. P. Michelle Lashley, Deputy Dean, Clinical and Lecturer in Child Health at Faculty of Medicine, UWI KFO Campus. She's also a pediatric consultant at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And she takes care of your kids, especially if they have if they're living with diabetes. Okay, so I'm not a dad. Ken in the studio is, and there are certain, what should a parent look out for in terms of certain symptoms? What kind of support can they give to their child other than insisting that they test, asking them, have you eaten for the day, those sort of hygiene or disciplinary things? It is hard enough being a teenager, I get the impression, and especially now with so many distractions of the electronic kind and the other kinds. And then you have this chronic condition that you did not ask for to manage on top of all of it. What are some practical steps? And maybe we do have a little bit of time left. We have like 15 minutes left. I think we can...
No, I'll give you 20 minutes. Jason?
Yes, Ken?
I'll let you have 20 minutes because I'm going to take 15 of it.
You're going to take 15 of the 20 minutes?
Yeah, because I've been quiet. I've been calm and cool and quiet all evening. So I'm going to take 15 minutes of that 20. Dr. Michelle.
Hi.
Good evening again to you.
Do you want me to answer first?
Yeah, please do. Answer Jason first, please.
Thank you.
I was going to put Jason in a picture in his place because I was going to tell him that all the things he's talking about adolescents don't want to hear.
As a former adolescent, I can concur with that.
And really and truly, what we have to do as parents, as diabetes team managers, as supporting adults, is to help them through this stage. Young children, most of the adolescents, do not do very well when you tell them what they have to do. You have to show them what they have to do, and you have to bring them along as part of the team. all the things that I mentioned before are just things that we notice about them. We have to be mindful too, obviously, not to make them get into big trouble. But we have to help them and make sure that they have targets and goals that they can manage. And you have to do it gradually in a stepwise manner. Some adolescents are fine. They will go through. They will know what they have to do. But I can tell you that 99% of adolescents with a chronic disease go into burnout. And you wonder, how can you have burnout when you're a child? But it is. This is something you have to do every single day. And they start having feelings of, why me? Their vulnerability increases. So getting peer support and peer support groups is really, really important. Recognizing the depression and anxiety that they may have and trying to help them along. Recognizing the diabetes burnout and walking them through it, because they can't get rid of it. You have to walk them through it. But the more you nag, the less they do. And you have to, parents, I think, are going to have to reach to a compromise point, depending on the parents.
Just say that last part once again, for the sake of all parents out there. The more you nag,
the less it happens.
That's it. Judy.
So we have to help the parents recognize that their role has to change in adolescence.
Absolutely.
From taking full responsibility and managing what they think is a vulnerable position to gradually transition into that independence that we want for the young adult. And it is the hardest job a parent can do. Whether your child has diabetes or not, it's a hard job. With diabetes, it's even harder because you can almost see in front of you illness, destruction, problems happening, and much less the fact that if they ever get a driver's license while they're in this stage.
Oh my, I didn't even consider that.
Okay, well, from my end, Jason has taken has sounded most of my thunder, and I have to agree that what is it, Aunt Judy? Wise men usually agree, fools differ, or something like that. Anyhow, I like us, please, to look at it more, to zoom in on the relationship part with or without diabetes. If you could just extend your point a little bit more. Because as soon as the youngsters become adolescents, and I seem to think that is a serious management problem here in parenting. Because they tell the children like things like, you think there's a woman here now, and you think there's a man now because you got a little moustache. I was told this more times than I have had hair on my head. You think there's a man now because you got moustache. And we're trying to express ourselves, and we're not listened to by our parents. And we're just like 14, 15, 16, and they don't listen to us at all, especially my people. They don't listen to you at all. You get a beating if you try to express yourself. Could you take that from there a little bit, please?
Well, certainly. I think that it's very difficult, and one of the things you have to recognize is that there are very different parenting styles that exist. The one you spoke of is obviously the parent who does not want to let go. They still want control, mm-hmm. and they're going to have a hard time doing that. And then you have the other parents on the other half of the world, even here too, who has this, well, do what you want. I don't really care what happens to you now.
They go from one extreme to another.
Exactly. So we have to recognize who we are as adults and recognize that these are still children. And I think that is the crux of the matter, which really happens too often, is that parents suddenly either think that you're big enough to do it yourself, therefore go ahead and do it, or that you're still so vulnerable and you still must be treated the same way as when you were 4 or 5 years old. My 23-year-old daughter tells me sometimes, stop asking me what I'm doing and remember that I'm an adult. She tells me that.
Listen, I'm 37 and my parents still do that to me occasionally. Only occasionally now, though. I found maybe I'm exposing myself and I'll get in trouble for saying that, but I'll take the risk anyway. It appears to me, and I'm not yet a parent, Dr. Michelle, that parenthood is very much a game.
Wait, let me interrupt you, Jason. This is the fourth time And Dr. Michelle has not picked it up. That you have explained or exclaimed that you are not yet a parent. Dr. Michelle, the lad is asking for help. He said it four times.
I don't think she's going to provide me that help on this. That'll be on this cover, this discussion.
Let him meet with you on the morrow at 9.
Oh, heavens. I got an appointment at 9. I can't meet nobody at 9 o'clock, sorry.
He's not ready yet, so you have to wait it out. He has to wait
Thank you.
But these are the things that we really have to come to grips with. And I think as physicians and medical personnel, the only thing that I would suggest is recognize the parenting skill that you're dealing with. Recognize the parenting style. And depends on which parenting style you're dealing with, you have to work with both adolescent and parents when you see things going down the road in the wrong direction. Most parents will listen to a third party because they then will judge us, meaning the physicians and the allied health personnel, because it's not just the doctors who are involved here. It's nurses, it's pharmacists like Trudy, it's diabetes educators, there are nutritionists. There are a lot of other persons who have been involved in these children's care and even general adolescents. But you have to recognize it's there. And one of the things I'd want to suggest for all adolescents is and their parents is check in with a health personnel person at least once every few years, because sometimes you're not getting it as right as you think.
Dr. Lashley, I want to interject here because I don't think we've mentioned it before, and I think perhaps we can mention it here. No. When you have a parent of a child who's living with diabetes, they actually go through some psychological stress as well.
Absolutely.
At the time of diagnosis, and all the while the child is growing up, because before that you were expecting that you had a healthy child who would grow up and live a full life and achieve all the things you envisioned for this child.
All the hopes and dreams.
You are now faced with a situation where your child has been diagnosed with a chronic disease, and you may get to a point of acceptance and adjustment, etc., and then you're hit with puberty. And as you said, the child doesn't listen. And now, beyond the fact that you thought maybe, you know, my child still has a future, now the child is actively not participating in their own care.
Yeah, it's really hard for the parents. Very hard for them.
How do we support parents in that whole mix?
Well, I think we need to recognize the parents' vulnerabilities, and we need to recognize that the parents now have a child who they had cushioned and cocooned, and they're virtually trying not to let them go. And we have to recognize that in the parents. So most of the time when we deal with the adolescents, particularly the diabetic adolescents, is that we will manage them separately. Talk to the parents on their own, see what their thoughts are and their goals are for their children, but then try to have the adolescents on their own managing and taking the adolescent as the chief caretaker of their own illness. So many parents want to take charge entirely, and that's where things break down. And I think the biggest thing here is that they each have to recognize that they have roles. And one of the things I do with some of the parents who can't quite let go is tell them that this is your role. You are to do this and this. But your child is to do this other thing. And your child is to send me that information separately. And you are to send me the other information. So that they have a recognized role in the care. And that sometimes helps them along a little bit better. It doesn't always work because we do have some very estranged parents who sometimes do not foster what you would call a healthy home environment for many of our adolescents, and having diabetes makes that no different. That home environment sometimes is neglectful, sometimes it's frankly abusive, but we still have to work with each parent that we have and see what their goals are and how we can get them through these difficult situations. More difficult is when there is drug abuse or alcohol abuse and very risky behaviors. And those, that is when the parents really feel that they have no control, and we might need secondary psychological support for not only the child, but also the mother or the father as well, too, because the parents are can be either mother or father or both in this situation.
Oh, well. Keep going. That is a lot of information. In fact, as we were having our conversation this evening, the one thing that keeps spinning around in my head is spontaneity. And how a diagnosis of diabetes just completely obliterates being spontaneous, being just able to get up and do what you want to do, just go anywhere. No, you have to be intentional about everything that you do. And while you can make those adjustments perhaps when the child is younger, puberty just takes them off in a completely different direction.
Yes. And that is one of the biggest problems. I'm glad you mentioned that, Trudy, because I want to make listeners understand it is exactly that. You have to plan. It's not so much you cannot do, but you have to plan to do. So, yes, you can go ahead and go to the cinema anytime you want, non-COVID time, but you have to plan that when are you going to take your insulin? Are you going to check your blood sugar before you go? Can you eat that big bowl of popcorn and have a drink as well if you haven't had your insulin? So you have
pizza parties. Are you low pizza parties?
Strong point for adolescents.
Oh my goodness.
No, I'm serious. Are you allowed to have pizza parties as a type 1 diabetic?
So you can go to parties.
Well, it depends on how much pizza you eat.
What you're going to do.
Yeah.
But everything has to be planned. Everything.
And you have to have a buddy, because you have to have somebody with you who knows what you're doing and can help you along the way. Because if your blood sugar drops low, then you start to get confused. You can't be there by yourself with someone who doesn't know you. So you not only have to plan, you also have to have somebody with you. So things get a little bit more complex. And for the adolescent who wants to be like their friends or wants to be normal.
Exactly
like the others, it's going to be a huge transition for them, which we have to take them along. Yeah.
Absolutely. With a couple minutes left in for the health of it in association with the Diabetes Association of Barbados, Trudy, I need for you to outline a couple of resources that can give our parents who are coping, our fathers in particular, who are coping with their children who have type 1 diabetes, and we need to give them some hope, some support, and some resources by which they can reach out and get that desperate help. Yet again, we haven't had many calls or any calls today, but I am not discouraged by that at all. I gather that we have a lot of keen listeners.
Studious listeners
who have been making their notes and updating their glossaries accordingly. Talk about the antibody, the auto, what's it called? Autoantibody.
Autoantibody.
Right. That. Okay. Yes, but more seriously, what resources are available to those parents and fathers in particular?
Okay, so I want persons out there who are listening to us to be aware that the Diabetes Association is here for support for all persons across the island who are living with diabetes, regardless of age. So if you have a child or you are yourself a young adult living with diabetes, you can certainly reach out to us. We are there to provide counseling, to provide support, any assistance that we can provide, or we can even direct you to resources. So you can call us. Our numbers are 427-9338. Or 437-2285. You can also reach out to us on our mobile, which is 230-2975. Now, we have a program which is called Sponsor a Child with Diabetes. So, therefore, we also provide tangible support for young persons who are living with diabetes.
We have support groups as well for persons who are living with diabetes. So if you yourself, I want to assure you that you are not alone. So please reach out to us if you're not already a member of the association, because we want to make sure that you can live a long, productive life regardless of your diabetes status, and we are here to provide that support. Jason, I think we are drawing to a close just about now. Ken has not yet rung the bell. But I certainly think...
Let me see if you can sneak in another minute before he's saying nothing.
We don't see if you can sneak in an hour.
I think we still have some areas of this topic that we have not yet explored, and therefore I think that we should continue next week. Dr. Lashley, I don't know if you are available next week, but we'll speak about that, and then we'll go from there. But certainly we need to continue this topic and make sure that all of our listeners are up to speed in terms of how they can support their children through puberty. But if you have a child who's living with type 1 diabetes or diabetes of any type, we're also here to support you.
Jody, absolutely. And as someone who's an uncle myself...
I think Dr. Lashley wanted to say something, Jason.
Okay, let's go. How about Dr. Lashley?
I was going to remind Jody about the peer support groups that we want to restart again for
absolutely.
Children as well as the parents. Because we have kind of, those are the things that the Diabetes Association has done very well with in the past. We have the Children Peer Support Group, and we have the Parents Peer Support Group as well.
Beautiful point.
Yeah.
With which we can end for the health of it for yet another Tuesday. This has been an excellent show, and we want to thank Dr. P. Michelle Lashley, Deputy Dean, Clinical and Lecturer in Child Health at the Faculty of Medicine, UWIKville. She's also, in her spare time, Pediatric Consultant at the QEH. You've also had on the call Ms. Trudy Griffith, the unflappable President of the Diabetes Association of Barbados. You can reach out to them at 423-427-9338, 230-2975, and provide that support for the parents. Because me, I'm an uncle myself, I want to keep on making sure that my charges are living well, even if they're dealing with a chronic condition like type 1 diabetes. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you, Trudy, once again. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And let's continue to live and love for the health of it.